Dr. David Guyer. We've had him on talking about injuries. We have him on today to talk about COVID-19, a.k.a. the coronavirus. Dr. Guyer, how are you? Thanks for this.
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I wish it wasn't for this reason, but always glad to talk to you guys.
I have a lot of questions for you to maybe dispel some myths, some urban legends about this virus. Number one, and something I was thinking about, and I want to get obviously your professional opinion on this, is it safer to contract this virus now and build an antibody for it instead of later on? Or can you get this virus more than once?
We don't know 100% that you can't get it. Most viruses, you're right, you develop a resistance to it, and then you don't get it again. You get a flu because you get a different strain of it, but we don't know. We think that you're going to be protected from this, but we don't know. And the virus may mutate, so this may be something that once there's a vaccine, it may be like the seasonal flu where you have to get a flu shot every year. The reason, and I'm not by any means saying that you want to get it now, but the upside, I think the problem with one of the problems with this coronavirus that could come about over the next 3 to 4 weeks is that as more and more cases appear, especially among the elderly and in that population, they're going to have, a lot of them will have very serious illness that requires them to be hospitalized. Our hospitals in both countries may get overwhelmed, and so getting it now, you know, you're probably less likely to be in a situation where access to the hospitals and the ICUs is more limited. So I think that's what some of the measures we're trying to take is to sort of flatten out the curve and sort of spread out. We don't want a huge spike in people getting it all at once.
Dr. Guyer, I'm in relatively good health. I don't have any underlying health issues. I'm 41 years old, and I don't consider myself, I'm not too overly worried about this because just based on my overall health. But what you just said, if the hospitals are overrun and a person in my situation gets this and is unable to get treatment at a hospital, is my life in jeopardy?
At your age, statistically, based on Chinese and South Korean data that we have, because they were getting this earlier than we are in our countries, your age, your health status suggests you're unlikely to get the severe form of this illness. I don't know the exact numbers because they constantly change, but at your age, I think you're somewhere in the less than 2% range. Maybe it's less than 3% chance of getting the serious form of this. And that's if you get the disease at all. So your odds are really low. That doesn't mean you should be overly confident, but you know, it is a concern. And one of the biggest reasons to try to prevent getting it in the first place.
Dr. David Guyer joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. I'm George along the Sportsnet radio network. People try to throw statistics my way, Dr. Guyer, and I just had somebody on saying the common influenza kills a lot more people worldwide, but that's 0.01%, the numbers I've seen, opposed to maybe as much as high as 3% for the coronavirus. Dr. Guyer, 3 people out of 100 seems like a lot to me that would potentially die from this.
That is high. Even that number is lower than some of the other pandemic coronaviruses, SARS back in 2002, MERS, which I think was 2008, 2009, I'm not sure about the date of that one, which were much higher. I think SARS was 10%. I expect that the fatality rate with this will end up less than 1% as we have more testing, and basically we'll identify more people that have mild versions of this. Plus, we're seeing in countries, China especially, that people that were treated, that were diagnosed starting February 1st or later, the death rate in China dropped to 0.7%. South Korea, it's at about 0.5%. Yes, it is. It has a higher fatality rate than the flu, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be as bad as they say. That is true. Whoever told you that, far more cases of the seasonal flu. I mean, just here in the United States, we've had somewhere between 18,000 and 46,000 deaths just in the last 5 months from the flu. So that is one thing that we do need to keep in perspective, that, you know, when you're comparing. It's apples to oranges, but the seasonal flu can be very dangerous for the same population, that elderly and sick patient population.
So then, Dr. David Guyer, because a lot of people want to bring up the influenza, then why the panic? Why the shutting down of everything? why the canceling of North American professional sports?
This virus tends to spread. It seems to spread much more easily, much faster than the seasonal flu. With the flu, somebody that's infected with the seasonal flu, on average, tends to affect about 1.3 other people. So you basically give it to one other person. Whereas this, based again on the data that we have, somebody that's infected with this coronavirus tends to affect about 3 other people. So it spreads much faster. Hopefully that will come down with some of these social distancing measures. But I think that's the reason for concern. It is a little more dangerous, like we just talked about, but it also spreads a lot easier.
To actually contract this virus from somebody else, what needs to happen? Clearly, if they maybe cough on you or sneeze on you, I understand that. But how close can you get to somebody? Is it just them breathing on you? How can you actually contract this virus?
Far and away, the most common way is through droplets that get into your nose or your mouth. Coughing, sneezing from an infected person is the most common way, and it needs to be within about 6 feet. Further than that, you're unlikely to get it. But that's the concern with sporting events, with large festivals, outdoor road races, conferences, that kind of thing, because a lot of times you're packed in closer than 6 feet. It's possible that when somebody that's infected gets it on their hand and then they touch a surface and then you touch it, you can get it that way, but that's much less common. Far and away, the most common way is through expelled droplets that you get into your nose or your mouth.
Is there a period of incubation here where you're more contagious? Because apparently, and you would know a lot better than I would, that apparently it's 2 to 14 days before you show symptoms. Are you more contagious before you show these symptoms? When are you actually contagious?
That's actually one of the biggest differences between this and the flu. Yes, it is possible to transmit this before you start showing symptoms, but that's not nearly as common. It doesn't seem to be as common as somebody that's infected transmitting it. Whereas the flu, the seasonal flu is much more likely to spread before somebody starts showing symptoms. Now, in both, you can, but I don't think that's going to be as big a risk here as, honestly, you need to stay away from people who are clearly exhibiting symptoms. The coughing, especially if they have fevers, that kind of thing, they're much, much more likely to transmit it than somebody that maybe has just had it for a day or two and doesn't even know it.
Dr. David Guyer joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. I'm George, along the Sportsnet Radio Network. We just took phone calls, and I continue to take text on our text line, Dr. Guyer, about whether or not you should be sending your kids to their sporting events or you should be still playing your beer league sports. What would you say to those people?
Well, here in the United States, and I think it's going to spread through North America pretty quickly, most states are closing severely limiting the high school sports and the youth sports. I don't think there are going to be many states that still are playing high school and youth sports past the end of this week, maybe through the weekend. I'll be surprised if some hold out, but I'll be surprised about that. As far as recreational sports, I guess it depends on the governing body, and if there's not one, I suppose people can hold a game. I think what I would say about that is if you're, young and healthy, no health problems, and you exercise all the precautions that we talk about with, not touching, shared surfaces and, obviously avoiding being near people that are coughing, sneezing, that kind of thing, maybe that's okay. I would strongly urge anybody that's feeling any kind of symptoms not to put other people's health at risk. And I think that's the concern that the health experts have and why they're closing so much of this is because it's better to mandate it than hope that everybody will do the right thing and stay away.
Just for our listeners to reiterate, what are some of the symptoms of this virus and what are some of red flags that you should maybe potentially contact a healthcare professional and get tested?
We're hearing all the time that this may feel like a cold, and I've heard numerous reports in the media and other places that people barely even realized they had it. They just felt like they had a couple days worth of cold-like symptoms. But typically this is a little bit more than that. It's probably a little closer to the flu. Typically higher fevers. You don't usually have a fever with the cold. You're going to have a cough, which is not usually indicative of a cold type of thing. But so fevers, cough, and then where it starts to be, hey, I need to go get this evaluated potentially, is shortness of breath or difficulty breathing. So I think if you have those symptoms, the fever, the cough, and maybe shortness of breath, before you go to the hospital emergency room and potentially do something like that, just call your doctor's office. Don't go to your doctor and sit in the waiting room and potentially infect people. Call your doctor and see what they want you to do. They may have a way that you can come in early before the office opens or after hours so that they can test you when it doesn't endanger other patients. But a lot of these coronaviruses, again, for the 80% of the population, if they get it, they're going to be able to treat it at home. So where you really have to worry is where the difficulty breathing and shortness of breath. That's when you would go to an emergency room.
Is the medical community, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, are they anticipating this thing to mutate and either be more severe or less severe?
We are expecting it to mutate. We don't really have a way of knowing. That's going to be something that we're probably going to figure out months down the road. Does it become less severe? Does it become more severe? We're also trying to figure out, we speculate, but we don't know, will it get less as the summer months come on and it warms up? Is it going to be like the seasonal flu where all of a sudden the cases pretty much go away and then it peaks back up again next fall and winter as it gets colder? There's a lot that we're not going to know until we've got data over a long period of time. But I think we're already seeing evidence of some genetic mutations. We just don't know, is that going to be a positive or negative in terms of our health?
We know that President Trump last night had some travel restrictions on European countries. But here in Canada, would it matter, Dr. Geyer, if we actually closed our borders, or would that just delay the spread of this virus?
To be fair, I'm not an epidemiologist, and I don't know sort of the ins and outs of the effects and the timing of these travel restrictions, whether it's airplane travel or you just don't let anybody in anyway. So I don't know that I have a strong feeling. I think that most, in our case, the Centers for Disease Control, and I apologize for not knowing what the equivalent of that is in Canada, but they usually have very good epidemiologists and public health experts to make that recommendation. What we seem to think here in the early rounds of this is that one of the reasons that our in the United States, we've gotten it slower than some of the other countries in Europe, is that we closed our borders to the countries that were seeing the biggest outbreaks. We closed travel from to and from those countries earlier than some of the European countries did. Maybe that played a role. Maybe it won't. We're not really going to know again until we have months and months of data. But I think that that's going to be the argument. Yes, it's restrictive, but it may cut the incidence a little bit. I wish I could give you a more definitive answer, but I think it's going to be a while. It's going to be one of those hindsight's 2020 answers. We're not going to know for sure until we see the effects of it.
We know that companies are feverishly working towards a vaccine for this. And I want to ask you a question, because I'm not sure, Dr. Geyer, if I'd want a COVID-19 vaccine now. How safe would that be? Because I'm not thinking about now and the virus now. What are the long-term potentially ramification side effects of a vaccine that maybe hasn't been around that long, and we don't know what it'll do to the human body from years from now? Is that me being paranoid? Is that me saying, no, you should be taking the vaccine? How should I treat potentially a vaccine that would be fairly new?
I agree with you, and that's been one of the criticisms that people have had with our approval process for not just vaccines but for drugs in the United States, is that there is a long testing process that's involved. And there's two reasons for that. You mentioned one, finding out the side effects, but there's also that just you have to prove that it works. There's ways to do that in the lab, but then you've got to do controlled trials and over a period of time to determine that it's effective and make sure that there aren't any side effects. And the concern with rushing that process is you may, one, be taking a vaccine and giving it to people, and it may do nothing at all. And then, two, you potentially introduce a higher risk of side effects. And so I tend to agree with what the FDA generally does and in our country is and be very safe with this. I understand the desire to rush this to market, but I think that there's a risk to doing that, and that's why I don't think you're going to see that in most civilized countries. I don't think they're going to rush a vaccine until they can prove it's safe.
Dr. Geyer, before I let you go, I just for the listeners, because we hear everybody saying wash their hands, is there a proper technique? Is there a proper time limit to wash your hands? What is generally the rule of thumb in your opinion?
The best way to wash your hands, and I know that this is hard, I know most people don't do this, but is to wash it with hot water. You turn on the hot water, and then you lather up your hands and obviously rub all surfaces of your hands for a total of 20 seconds. And I know in our schools they're teaching kids to sing happy birthday twice, you know, in their heads, or sing the ABCs, something to make sure that they're doing it for 20 seconds. Whether or not you sing a song or something like that, that's what we think, because that gives the soap time to kill all, you know, not just viruses, but bacteria and other germs on your hands. That's a pain. I get that, but that's better. Now, if you don't have the ability to wash your hands, you're somewhere out in public and you touch something, or you accidentally, you know, maybe end up shaking hands and you don't think about it, having hand sanitizer is not as good, but it's certainly better than not doing anything at all.
Dr. David Geyer, this is great stuff, great information. Thanks for this.
Yeah, absolutely, and hopefully we will have sports back in our countries here in the next month or so. We will see.